This is an interview with Mickey Old Coyote, January 21st, 1994.
See, the nighttime and how they see the stars and what it means to them, you know, being a part of that philosophy from the, that we come from the natural world, they are very observant, you know, of things that are about, mm-hmm. you know, the heavenly bodies, the cycle of day and night, all these things. So they have some descriptions, you know, pertaining to, you know, the stars. Mm-hmm. You know, as the end of the day, when the sun is setting, and just as the sun is setting, right about that time, you know, the sunset is observed, you know, with optimism again, where, you know, it tells you what kind of day the next day is going to be. Mm-hmm. If it's very bright and colorful and orange and, you know, just a beautiful sunset, it means it's going to be a good day the next day. Mm-hmm. So it makes them feel good to see this kind of sunset. And then shortly after the sun goes down, then the evening star appears, you know, evening star Jupiter, Mercury, you got down here. When the evening star appears, then, you know, they say that right about the time of dusk, after the sun goes down, dusk, at that moment, dusk, you know, when things are still visible but not too clear, they say silhouettes of any objects are larger in appearance. You know, it's a sort of a optical illusion or whatever, but it's they say that objects appear larger than they actually are. Mm-hmm. They appear larger at that moment. And right after this dusk, then right around the full darkness comes on, and the time of the, you know, the dusk, they say that sounds are very audible, you know, from distances. They call it Bilkikurikisak. That's how it, what they describe that as, you know, a person, people talking from a distance away. Mm-hmm. You know, their conversation can, right, is it can be heard, but they can't make out. It's you could tell that there's, you know, sounds are very keen at that moment. Mm-hmm. And right about the midnight type, close to midnight, you know, around 11 or so, according to today's version of clock, using the clock and so on. But about that time, they say kamirchapik means, you know, that people have gone to bed now, you know, and they desire good dreams, you know, before they go to bed, that kind of thing. And throughout the night, you know, everything's quiet. Then they observe, you know, if it's a clear night, it means, you know, that all the stars are brightly observed, you know, the brilliance of the stars. Mm-hmm. They say that, you know, it's a good time, you know, good, everything's quiet, no inclement weather or anything, and they observe that with, you know, good feeling. Mm-hmm. Then toward the morning, going into morning hours, wee hours as we call it, Karash. See, throughout that time, you know, everything's quiet. And here, right about just before the star appears, you know, the then this, when this Izantipasha means, you know, that's when it's darkest, Izantipasha, just before dawn, that's when it appears. Mm-hmm. when that happens, shortly afterwards, then the morning star appears. You know, Icareja. Sirius, star. Icareja appears, or in this case, right about that time, they say that's perhaps one of the most, you know, sacred times too, you know, throughout the night, because they greet the morning star with good feeling. They say the first maker is closest to you right at that moment. That's how they, you know, describe that moment. And throughout the night, like I say, they desire good dreams. And in one of the philosophies behind this feeling is that the first maker supposedly will have communication with you through dreams. And they express and interpret good dreams, and they want to share those good dreams, you know, with their immediate loved ones, you know, your immediate family, children, grandchildren, your wife, grandparents, you know, immediate family, and others of their concerns. And when that time, shortly after that, then you hear the noises of the birds. You know, birds are waking up. They're coming back into, you know, happiness and, you know, happy times. And one of the practices behind it is that you wake up with the birds and sing with them and rejoice with them right at that time. It means, you know, roll out early. And then when the old man appears again, the sun, they call it the old man. I'll tell you the reason behind why they call it the old man. When it appears, you greet the day with optimism and appreciation once again. You know, you're coming into a new day. Then you ask for good things during that day. That's what it means. Here's a story about why they call the sun the old man. See, they relate to the heavenly bodies. Sun is life-giving, light, everything. They say all living things are dependent upon that sun. You know, for warmth, for and all living things need that sun, the light. So with that, they see it observed with reverence and appreciation, you know, the closest I can come to on that. So why they call the sun the old man, they say during an eclipse, this was so far back we don't know, a long time ago, probably legendary times. They say that during that eclipse, the sun and the moon crossed over. They look up there to observe, you know, this phenomenon of, you know, the eclipse. They say the sun was an old man. They've been up there for so long that he was an old man. And the moon was an old lady. That's why they refer to the moon as the old lady, our grandmother, our grandfather, the old man. Just like they say, Birizaka, water is also referred to as grandfather. Land is referred to as our mother, our first mother, because it gives life. It provides all your needs. That's why they refer to it as Mother Earth. So cycle of night in interpretation or, you know, recognition of different types of cycles and how the stars play into it is very important, because it's a time frame throughout the night that they observe good things about. And this is how they treat this very particular time. So this is information that we gather, you know, from family, you know, traditional way of life, of understanding, you know, the cycle of not only day but nighttime as well, as well as, you know, life ways. For example. You have here, you know, tobacco and rock medicines were stars. In the Sacred Tobacco Society ceremony, there's a story dating back to the time when there was a famine back when they were around the Great Lakes area. During that famine, they were in three bands, the Clearwater, Ishpiritazia, Ashasaka, you know, Edge of Lodges, and Hidarija, newly formed. These were the three bands. Mm. During that famine, one prominent member from the Hidarija, today they call him Hidatsa, Hidarija of the three bands, had instructed his two sons to go fasting and look for a way out to overcome the famine. Mm. So his two sons went out to fast. Mm. And while they were fasting, the two brothers, one's name is Red Scout and the other one's name is No Vitals. While they were fasting, according to oral history from this particular time, upon their return, their father had already prepared a sweat and waited for his sons to return. Upon their return, he took them into the sweat lodge. The sweat lodge is a sacred ceremony. Again, you know, purification and, you know, spiritual, and also to overcome, you know, any type of anxieties and that might, you know, and also to relate good things in there, good experiences, whether they're dreams or whether to overcome a bad dream or, you know, something that you, but the sweat is the sacred ceremony that addresses all of your things that you want to relate to in a, you know, spiritual approach. So upon their return, he asked his two sons to relate their experience while they were fasting. And Red Scout says that he was given the corn and squash for his livelihood, and he was to stay there and cultivate that. Mm-hmm. And No Vital says that he was given the sacred tobacco seed, you know, for his livelihood, and he was to become a warrior and a hunter for his livelihood. And he was to go to the mountains for this. Mm-hmm. Shortly after this, they overcome the famine. They had a big kill, and oh gosh, everyone was just, you know, happy times again, you know. You know, they had abundance of food, and, you know, everything was back to good things again. And so he pointed out that he's going to follow up on his dream, the experience that he had, that he was given a sacred tobacco seed, that he was come to the mountains. So he left. And in the meantime, there were two things that kind of relate to this. One was after the big, during the big kill, the two stories on this. One version I'll tell you that the a family had squabbled over the inside of a buffalo, meaning the tribe, and so the one family split, and some came with No Vitals and some stayed behind. Mm. And the other version of that story is that the whole tribe kind of like, you know, pouted and left. No, it's just one family, they say, that split. But anyhow, they came with No Vitals on his quest for sacred tobacco seed. Mm-hmm. And he traveled, you know, through the forest, and all the way up to, through the plains, through mountains, and all, you know, all in this general area. Mm-hmm. Clear down to what they call Cutty Indian River down in Texas and Oklahoma, and, you know, clear up to, you know, Canadian provinces of today, and in search of this. Finally, they say he found him near the mountains here, up here. And the first time, first Tobacco Society ceremony occurred by adopting his own son into the Sacred Tobacco Society. Mm. From that time on, other fraternities or societies have merged into the Sacred Tobacco ceremony. And the names of each is like the Long Sacred Tobacco Society, Yellow Sacred Tobacco Society, the Otter Tobacco Sacred Tobacco Society, the Weasel Society, the Mallard, the Meadowlark, and Blackbird, and then the Eagle Society, and then Star, mm-hmm. Star Society. Mm-hmm. So although they're all in one tobacco society, sacred tobacco ceremony, then they relate to each. They have, like if you're adopted by the Star family, your adopting parents are Star mm-hmm. Society, and if they adopt you, that's who you belong to in that society, mm-hmm. even though it's all general. Mm-hmm. So the practice of that particular ceremony, they say this is why we are Apsaroga today, mm-hmm. because from that experience, there are four things that they observe as Apsaroga. Mm-hmm. The during Sacred Tobacco Society ceremonies, they say there are four things that they observe, they apply that. Mm-hmm. One is the sweat, mm-hmm. and one is the pipe, and one is the clan system, and then the Sacred Tobacco Society itself. Mm-hmm. They say this is what makes us Apsaroga. Mm-hmm. Today they interpret it as crow, but we are the Apsaroga, mm-hmm. children of a large beak bird. Mm-hmm. And so we are the only, to my knowledge, we are the only tribe that practice the sacred tobacco ceremony. Mm-hmm. They say the Blackfeet saw the crows perform this one time. They have this particular ceremony for a while, but they say that, you know, it's still intact today, it's still carried on today. Mm-hmm. And they are desirous, of course, all of them are good, but like if it's a star plant, they feel that they desire to own one of the, when they have their planting that occurs in early spring. Mm-hmm. They have their Sacred Tobacco Society planting right about the time when the choke cherry blossoms are in place, white choke cherry blossoms. Mm-hmm. That's when they have their Sacred Tobacco Society seed planting. Mm-hmm. If they don't have Sacred Tobacco seed planting, they would have a Sacred Tobacco Society dance. Mm-hmm. So that's the way the practice goes every mm-hmm. spring, they say. Mm-hmm. They say that whenever this Sacred Tobacco seed mixture ceremony occurs, they say it rains all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, throughout the four nights of sacred mm-hmm. ceremony, this particular ceremony. Mm-hmm. And so our identity is in relation to all of these as Apsaroga. Mm-hmm. Sweat, Sacred Sweat Lodge. They use the pipe in there too, in a Sacred Tobacco Society. Mm-hmm. And the clan, you know, throughout the ceremony, they have a clan. Means, you know, they offer gifts, you know, to the mm-hmm. to the ceremony itself, and then they're given food in return, and each clan group mm-hmm. will share, you know, the food from the Sacred Tobacco Society. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where the clan plays into it. And of course the sacred tobacco plant that brought us to these mountains. Mm-hmm. And after that three bands, you know, we are down into three bands again. Mountain Crow, River Crow, Bighorn Basin Crow, which was later identified as Kicking the Billy Band mm-hmm. from another story. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the fourth one, they say, Beaver Dries Fur, they say they up and left. They don't know where they went from here, whether mm-hmm. they gone back to the Lakes area or into Canada or intermingled with the Kiowas, they don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But three bands, which were later broken down into six districts today. And mm-hmm. so the Mountain Crows are Pryor, Bighorn, and Reno. Mm-hmm. And River Crows, Black Rocks District of today. Mm-hmm. And Wyola and Lost Grass are the Bighorn Basin Crows. Mm-hmm. So that's the way the story goes.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that the plant itself, the tobacco plant itself, has the image of a star.
Design of a star, yeah, uh-huh. yeah, so. Yeah. Like if it's a star, they say, you know, it's kind of desirous to, you know, of all the plants. They're all in relation, but mm-hmm. that's all it's related to. Ikemija, mm-hmm. Ikemija means the stars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where it plays into sacred tobacco ceremony. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's good.
there's a story of, I heard this when I was from my grandmother many years ago. You know, the nighttime telling of legends occurs, like I say, you know, during winter months, you know, when there's snows on the ground, long nights, and the idea there, I mentioned that earlier, that, you know, to keep the place flickering with fire and warmth and all that, to linger that on longer into the night, prolonging the storytelling time occurs. And actually, inside the teepee is a way of learning, you know, about our legends and our way of life. And some of these stories are in association with everything that's about. And, you know, you start with the ground or whatever, water and all these. And some of them pertains to, I just mentioned a little bit about the sun and the moon. And now the stars, the most obvious ones of these is what they call the seven stars, or Ikisapwa, where they refer to it as where you point your pipe stem. Ipsarabajwa. Ipsarabajwa means that's where you point your, you know, in offering your good things to the heavenly bodies. That these experience of this shield canal is a shield, it means, you know, kind of like burn here. Uh-huh. And in that story, there were some pretty treacherous characters in that story. And this woman that has a hook, you know, on the forehead, on the head like this, or not a hook, but a spear-like thing on her head, that has, you know, like imyechitua means, you know, like this, you know. This is the imyechitua, you know, this is the point.
Uh-huh. Oh, the barb.
Yeah.
Or the, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they refer to as imyechitua. Imyechitua, you know. And she uses that to destroy other beings that are there. And in that story, that this man took on these bad things that are about. And he approached, you know, this man with all sorts of sacred medicines. And he was advised, you know, it's dangerous. He already knows that, you know, to destroy this woman and her son that has these pointed spear type things on your head that they can destroy. And throughout that story, this man that offered him to go see this man, you know, to observe, you know, to acquire sick medicine so he could be, you know, for his protection. And he was told that, you know, as he goes, you know, these other help will be there, but, you know, you have to approach this man in a manner that he'll lay out all of his, there's a large body of water where you have to cross. There's going to be a dog there. Be sure and carry some pemmican, you know, to, he'll instruct you how to get there. And once you get there, you know, of course, there's a lot of bad things that have occurred to him. So he seeked out to destroy these two treacherous things. And so in doing this, he was instructed, when he asked you, oh, in the meantime, you know, there's a lot of bad things that happened to them. And so he was trying to overcome all the bad things that that these treacherous things have applied to them. So in that story, he come to this man, and a lot of bad things that had happened to them, like I said, so he was out to the courage that he had, you know, kind of inspired him to go on. Because in the meantime, they had a beautiful sister too, you know, this group here. And, you know, she was also in part of their scheme, you know, to ruin them type thing. So he rescued her and all that kind of thing in that story. But the main part of that story was when he approached this man with all the sacred objects, that his instructions were, he'll lay out all the sacred things that he points out, each one for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll ask you to, you know, pick one, which one you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he says, which one do you want to take? And you say to him, I want you.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you can't back away, you have to help. Mm-hmm. So that's what he did. And that's when that dog came out, or the dog will be waiting for you on your way.
Mm-hmm.
When you straddle his dog, he'll swim across this large body of water.
Mm-hmm.
He'll take you across to these treacherous places.
Mm-hmm.
And so when this happens, when the dog is paddling along, and when he tires out, you know, feed him a pemmican, he'll pick up his strength again.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that, all of that. And then finally, when he come to this rock dwelling, that's their home.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you know, he had an encounter with Shioja. And so he'll do bad things to you. And, you know, even the door is made out of rock.
Mm.
And, you know, in that dwelling, it's hard to penetrate.
Mm.
When you do that, when you come to that part, you know, if you ever can get inside that rock dwelling, if they try to trick you into, or they can destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
So use your wits, you know, to. And so he went out there, and in that story, he did encounter this treacherous man, where he managed to. According to that story, he went to this place again, and like they'd done all kinds of bad things to him, but he, each time he would come through, and then finally, they opened this rock door, and as he tried to peek out, and then he closed the door on him, it cut off the head.
Mm.
And so she come flying out, you know, and in the meantime, he went inside the him and his lady friend were inside the rock dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
They were safe. And so this dangerous woman would go up real high and then come down and would hit the rock, the rock dwelling, and it would chip off. Each time he do that, she do that, you know, he was instructed to wet it with his saliva and like patch it.
Mm.
And finally, she says, let me see, you know, her son's head, you know, the one with the spear thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when she tries to do that, she's going to try and trick him into, like if she comes inside, she would destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
But as you open a door, just open them wide enough to peek your head in, you know, to stick your head in at that moment, you close the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like it was planned out type thing, sure enough, you know, she finally gave up, you know, trying to break up the rock dwelling. Says, let me look, you know, her son.
Mm-hmm.
When they both have, you know, sharp things on their head.
Mm-hmm.
As she tried to, she said, just let me look at his face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they placed it in, you know, place where, you know, just open the door. As she tried to stick her head in and close the door again, chopped off her head.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
So they come back and, the two got married according to, it's a kind of like a romanticized type story.
Mm.
You know, the beautiful lady.
Mm.
But her brothers were from other place, is what it is.
Mm.
You know, they're not from this earth, from this ground.
Mm.
And so he was, so they're, his brother-in-laws, there were seven of them.
Mm.
And they also possess sacred powers.
Mm.
And he was a man, you know, mm-hmm. he was a man. But these seven brother-in-laws of his have these sacred powers. Now that the bad things were destroyed, you know, they decided to become something that they could be there forever.
Mm.
So they had a meeting, you know, among themselves.
Mm.
What shall we become, you know, so we can last forever?
Mm.
And suggestions were, why don't we become wood? Oh, trees.
Mm.
And trees. Okay. Rocks from erosion, you know, would fall. Why don't we come water? Oh, water, sometimes, you know, they would dry up, you know, from hot and heat and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a long discussion on this, and finally one of them says, why don't we become, or they point the pipe stem to the stars,
mm-hmm.
and then we can be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we can watch Yapsaloga forever.
Mm.
So they said, that's a good idea. And they say the youngest brother had a pet. They say the pet was a bear, according to the story I heard.
Mm.
So that's when they become the seven stars.
Mm.
And they become the Big Dipper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that idea that they become, you know, the stars were. Every time, like when offer prayers to the east, to the south, to the west, to the north, groundward, upward, and then finally themselves, seven times this year.
Mm.
And the spirit is kind of like, is within too. You remind yourself of the spiritual connection that they have with the seven brothers, that they have power. And they say the pipe actually come from the heavens too, that was brought to us from a young lady. That's a different story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's where the pipe stem, where they point the pipe stem, that's where the seven stars come into, according to that legend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep. That's good. Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
One of the legends that's still talked about today, that they relate to in the legendary times, that they say that the seven buffalo all have names, the seven buffalo, and their common enemy was Humatish, the bull with the connecting bones. That it was impossible to injure him or destroy him.
Mm.
That was their adversary in that story.
Mm-hmm.
When they had an encounter one time with Humajish, you know, the seven buffalo all have, they say they take turns, you know, in any type of a situation where they help each other.
Mm.
They say buffaloes help one another.
Mm.
The story goes into many, some of the ideas of coming to the aid of your peer group, whatever. That's what it reflects.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven buffalo would always helpful to one another. And one time they encountered the bull with the connecting bones.
Mm.
And one's four front leg was broken in two. Broke the. So the southern buffalo took their injured one into a sled lodge. A sled lodge. And in that story, I told you that the sweat is a spiritual thing, but at the same time, it also for healing, healing purposes. And they say that the southern buffalo all help each other and come into, you know, the clearing, you know, where it's safe ground and that kind of thing. They overcome their predicament, you know, of whatever. It could be, we'll use a snowdrift, for instance. They say they'll go so far, they take turns, you know, coming through. They help each other. When one is injured, they go on each side of the injured buffalo and they help along and bring them back to good health. That's what it reflects. And the seven bulls took their injured fellow buffalo, bison, into the sweat. And the sweat, you know, the first, according to that legend, according to that story, that after they got through with the sweat, they said he walked up. He was well again. And that's what it reflects, you know, you get well again, you know, once you go into the sweat, you come out. And in there, they talk about the seven buffalo. It's more than that. It's more than just seven buffalo. They all have names. We'll come to that later. But the thing I'm telling about, that philosophy that came from that, the practice of the sweats, is goes back to legendary times. That the seven buffalo had sweat, sweat lodge, sacred sweat lodge. They say that sacred things come from seven sources: the land, water, air, and fire. Then the other part that comes into play in sacred things are the plant life, animal life, bird life, all these. They said these are the sources, you know, that premates life, that offer life, that give you life. And they say the first maker designed this for us to utilize and enjoy. And so we have stories about animals, and birds, and land, and water, and fire, and plant life they use for food and treatment of the sick, many things that are in association. And they say that these other animal life and bird life also possess supernatural powers, that they're the helpers of that first maker. You know, he sent them to us, you know, to help sustain life. And that's what it means, you know, in the legends of also to help one another type thing. It's one of the philosophies that they come into good things, you know, as time goes on. And sweat is the most sacred of all the ceremonies that we have. And that's why it's stressed, you know, the sweat lodge. You can, it's another story of, in the big metal story about the seven rams, that he was given all sorts of powers by the other birds and animals that are about. He was instructed never to abuse the sweat. He could tease all the other sacred things, but not the sweat. That's why the sacredness of the sweat is observed with a lot of respect and reverence, because of the, this is how it's in relation to, you know, the, that is very helpful. So that's the philosophy behind, you know, the seven buffalo bulls. And
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to bear, bear above, ma kalach bicha. In technical terms, astronomy is referred to it as Hercules. When we look at the background of how bear is observed, there are many how you relate to the bear family, whether it's grizzly or black bear, all of these. They play an important role into some of our animal stories, songs, and ceremonies, and also the dwelling. They all play an important role into even warrior societies, all of these things. Even they say that the bear is our brother. He is the monarch of these mountains up here. He is the king of the mountain, shall we say, mm-hmm. the bear. Mm-hmm. They learn a great deal from the bear, our life ways. He's a reminder, too, of many things. That star up there reminds you of the bear's role as they observe, you know, the life ways and styles and behavior of the bear and its strength and bravery and courage and the ferociousness as well, that he's very protective of his, you know, domain. That's what it means, you know, with the bear. So when we look at the bear aspects of things, they say that the palm of your hand, you know, represents the fangs of a bear. Mm-hmm. And when an individual drinks water, when they consume the water, right after they swallow, they make a noise like a bear.
Mm.
Kind of like growling. It means, you know, that the bear is within, you know, you reflect upon the bear. Not only that, but they say that warrior societies, young men, when the bears first come out of hibernation in the springtime,
mm-hmm.
We'll say about a two-year-old young bear, perhaps a grizzly or any other bear, but they say that they're very vicious when they come out. You know, they're hungry because they've been hibernating all winter.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the young warriors would harass these bears most of the day until they get them in fighting rage. And after, you know, the bear is pretty tired, then they would kill the bear and cut its heart out. And each warrior would take a small piece of the bear's heart and swallow it. By consuming the small portion of the bear's heart, that they would reflect upon the bear in warrior society or anything that they undertake, that they would be just as brave as the bear, courageous as the bear, mm-hmm. and also the strength of the bear. And psychologically they do this, but they also have the spirit of the bear. That's what warrior societies do, they say.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, the teepee dwelling, the bear plays a role in that teepee dwelling, that he is one of the sentries.
Mm.
They say the doorway pole on the north side, on the inside of the teepee, is the cougar. On the right side, on the south side of the doorway pole, represents the bear.
Mm.
On the outside, on the north side, is the owl, the sentry on the outside at nighttime.
Mm.
During the day, it's the coyote, you know, on the outside, the flagpole on the right.
Mm.
So, bear song ceremony, as they call it, bear, the Chejuli Sut, bear song dance, mm. is a ceremony that's been over 100 years now since they, I heard that my mother says that it's been a long time ago since
mm-hmm.
the last time that they practiced this bear song ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
But when they have this bear song ceremony, they say they have some kind of a tree or something where they cover a bear's hide or bear's skin.
Mm-hmm.
And they have songs that relate to this ceremony. And they say that persons with supernatural powers that's given to them or adopted by, you know, some animal form or animal or bird.
Mm-hmm.
They say that it draws them to the ceremony,
mm-hmm.
and their powers would come out. And mm-hmm. they could this is one way of telling, you know, who possesses, you know, sacredness or supernatural powers.
Mm-hmm.
So bear song dance is one of the most sacred ceremonies too among the Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And also they have bear stories, bear songs. The lullabies, one of the lullabies come from one of those stories. You know, that the lullabies come in many forms, whether it's about a deer or, you know, whether it's about hunting or whether it's playing. All these things, they say that lullaby songs are not composed.
Mm-hmm.
They're acquired from fasting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And they say by doing the songs and rocking their infants, their child,
mm-hmm.
they say they live a long life, you know,
mm-hmm.
grow up the normal way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's desired. So what are the practices? What are the lullabies, you know, come from the bear?
Mm-hmm.
And women are the ones that sing these lullabies.
Mm-hmm.
A grandmother, a mother, an aunt, or a sister, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very appropriate that, you know, bear is reflected in our way of life in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but they have identification of, you know, some of the terrain or some of the mountain ranges, like the Beartooth Mountains, the Bear Paw Mountains,
mm-hmm.
the Chase the Gotch, the Beartooths, the Chase the Gotch,
mm-hmm.
The Chase Azal, Devil's Tower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chase Azal is kind of like the occupational dwelling of the bear.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's referred to
mm-hmm.
in Crow, you know, in some of the geographic area identification of
mm-hmm.
terrain and outstanding features of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to bear, you know, we they even have bear names, and, you know, people that have been adopted by the bear or have possession of the powers, the supernatural powers of the bear,
mm-hmm.
that these animals and birds are the helpers of the first maker, that they're the helpers, you know,
mm-hmm.
to us. And that's why they refer to us being adopted by a particular bird or an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And the bear also plays an important role in,
mm-hmm.
in some of these positions, not only names or songs, but, you know, overall, he's our brother. That's how they
mm-hmm.
observe, you know, the bear family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.